Well, good morning, friends. Let me add my own welcome to all of you long-timers and newcomers to our congregation. And so the new year begins. Travelers return home from journeys far and wide. And regardless of the destination, the question upon returning is often something like this: how is my life different? What now shall I do with my one wild and precious life? Our predecessor, Ralph Waldo Emerson, upon returning home after having spent some time away, would always greet his friends by asking them, "Tell me, what have you learned since we last met? What has surprised you? What has challenged you or disturbed you? What has deepened your mind and your spirit? What has left you speechless in wonder and amazement?" You know, it's curious if traveling can put us in touch with our truer and deeper selves. In doing so, we may also appreciate some measure of detachment or being anonymous, free-floating. When I am entering a new and unfamiliar landscape, I am free of labels and expectations of those around me. When I am out on the open road, no one can place me. No one can fix me within my resume. And instead, I can remake myself. Perhaps for better, perhaps for worse. But I have some options. Question: can you recall a time when you took off, leaving behind identifying labels? Where did you go? Do you recall feeling joyful, maybe a bit fearful? Did you wear a little name tag hidden under your clothes that said something like, "If found, please return to..." When I was 12 years old, I spent the summer with my dad on the campus of Sarah Lawrence College in Bronxville, New York. My dad taught summer school, but I was free to explore. And I did so. Each morning, I walked down the hill to the Bronxville station and hopped on a train into Grand Central. And from there, a 15-cent subway token was all that I needed to enter the Big Apple and to Vistas Unlimited, from Coney Island to Yankee Stadium to the zoo and Far Rockaway. Now, my favorite destination, I must admit, it's going to sound weird, but my favorite destination was to get in line with the tourists at NBC Studios at Rockefeller Center, hoping for free tickets to one of those TV game shows. Don't ask me why I was there. Why did I find The Price is Right and screaming for joy? Why was that so fascinating? I especially remember a show called Strike It Rich. Anybody else remember that one? The top prize was $500. And the guests were often single moms with heartbreaking stories of poverty or personal tragedy. And the show's MC, named Warren Hull, fought back his tears as the guests described maybe their ramshackle home, hoping to get a little bit lucky on that day on the show and to take home at least a little bit of grocery money. If only they could remember what's the capital of Uzbekistan or whatever the quiz questions were. And there were four questions, as I recall. And then after I had attended a couple of these game shows, by mid-afternoon that was enough, and so I caught the BMT train out to Coney Island and the Midway. And its loop-de-loop rides and cotton candy and junk food of all sorts. And eventually that evening I made my way back to Bronxville. The next morning, more of the same. And back then, it was quite safe for a 12-year-old to explore New York. Now I'm in my 72nd year, and I've become more selective in how I spend time with family, professional colleagues and friends, and on my own. Exotic destinations hold less fascination for me now, and instead I choose a few places to return to and return often for renewal. For instance, the Rose Garden at the University of British Columbia, the Nobscot Point Lighthouse along the coast of Cape Cod. My priorities have shifted, and I'm preferring to linger rather than touch a lot of bases. I'm preferring to pay closer attention to people and events in just a few places. A question for today and for our water communion, which will be coming up soon. Do you return, perhaps again and again, to places which you know by heart? You know them by heart, but you keep coming back, because in that returning, that experience feeds your heart and soul. You know, I've met different sorts of travelers along the way with different sorts of mindsets. One type of traveler might be called the true believer, folks who are very sure of their destination. They are certain of the correct path to get there and the signposts along the way. Their landscapes and paths may lie within the corporate world or politics or science, ethics, religion, a wide variety. But they are very sure that this is the way, period. Such travelers are sure of themselves and their aiming point. Some true believers may even build barricades along the way to guard against any distracting pathways or alternative points of view. True believers. A second kind of traveler we might call the skeptic or the cynic, folks who deny that there's any place really worth seeking for truth and meaning. No destination really matters. And skeptics or cynics may shrug in indifference or default to sarcasm or ridiculing other travelers or filling the road with potholes, having little interest in doing the hard work of exploring and trial and error and discovery. Cynics may prefer to just be quality control inspectors and judge the paths of others. And for both of these groups of travelers, their journeys may only rarely honor the life that has been given to us. True believers remain confined within barricades of certainty. Cynics' journeys may be riddled with indifference. And for cynics, there can be no destination, no departures, no arrivals. It's almost as if one were forever parked and waiting in the cell phone lot. I wonder, do I sometimes default into such a pattern? Spiritual vagabond, waiting in the cell phone lot. In a way, all dressed up, but any place to go? I think there's a third group of travelers whom we might call seekers. Seekers are a ragtag assortment of scouts and pilgrims, questers and jesters, inquirers and pioneers, tinkerers and visionaries. Seekers travel in wide-eyed, joyful anticipation and a willingness to be surprised and be changed. Often they'll pause to smell the flowers, sure. But they're equally intent on discovering some new landscapes over the horizon. Seekers share a common characteristic, an inner restlessness with standing too long in the same place, a strong curiosity about the next curve in the road, a delight in the journey itself, a resolution to always walk in freedom and integrity. And finally, a conviction that the way home is not backward. They don't drive by looking in the rearview mirror and trying to steer by the rearview mirror. They know that the way home is always through. You don't look for a bypass. Don't look for an exemption or an exception. The way home is always through. To arrive at the place where we started and get to know that place for the first time. I left the woods, wrote Mr. Thoreau. I left the woods for as good a reason as I went there. Perhaps it seemed to me that I had several more lives to live. I did learn this, that if one advances confidently in the direction of their dreams and endeavors to live the life that one has imagined, they will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. That's Mr. Thoreau. Friends, I wonder, perhaps traveling and love may be very similar. Because after all, both involve a sensitive awareness, mindfulness and receptivity, unburdened by fixed familiarity, we are open to be transformed and amazed. Perhaps this is why the best journeys, like the best of loving relationships, they never finally end. They bring us from despair to hope, and they bring us back to the roots which hold us close. And they offer the wings which just may set us free.